All right, hello everyone. I've been trying to start YouTube or iTunes so that I could play a song as I traditionally do, and I haven't been able to get either one of them to start, which I think is quite interesting. You know, I tried two different ways, so I guess I'm not supposed to play a song today. No, that's okay. I'm fine, you know, except what is. We'll just jump right into the sharing. One thing I want to say, which I would have forgotten to say if it hadn't been for Sharon. Sharon said something about a teaching that's going to follow me today that she's interested in. If she's referring to self-abidance with Ayla, Ayla has changed her mind. So that was taken off of the schedule. She texted me about a week ago. I got her text right after I came out of my 3 days of seclusion saying that she had changed her mind and that she wasn't feeling inspired to share from self-abidance anymore. So I took that off of the schedule, and there is now an open half hour after me. So last week I read the story of Ramana Maharshi and Papaji. And today I wanted to read the story of Ramana Maharshi and Robert Adams. I don't know if you all know who Robert Adams is. He is an American, at least in the end of his life. He was living in Sedona, Arizona, and he held satsang there. His most popular book is called, Silence of the Heart. Silence of the Heart is his most popular book. So some of you may know Robert Adams. His story with Ramana Maharshi is kind of interesting, so I'm going to read that today. I'm noticing that Cheryl is saying she will play an AWA meditation from, or is it a meditation or is it a teaching? Something from Michael Langford's YouTube playlist. So she will be playing from that after I'm complete. All right, so let's. Yeah, you're not exactly sure if it's a meditation or a teaching. Okay, so we'll find out. All right, so I will begin reading then the story of Robert Adams and Ramana Maharshi. Well, my computer's not happy. Hopefully we'll be able to make it through this without me having to reboot. Oh, well, whatever was wrong with it, it just disappeared as soon as I said that. Okay. In 1992... while traveling from San Diego to Phoenix, I had, oh, by the way, I in this story is Ganeshan, who is Ramana Maharshi's grand nephew. And I did have the privilege of meeting Ganeshan about a year and a half ago in North Carolina. And he was raised around Ramana Maharshi. How do you spell Ganeshan? Is it? There you go. It's G-A-N-E-S-H-A-N, Ganeshan. Yeah. So he is Ramana Maharshi's grandnephew, and he lived with or around Ramana Maharshi, had a lot of interaction with Ramana Maharshi when he was a young child. Later in life, after Ramana Maharshi had passed away, I think probably about 10 years after, Ganeshan received guidance to go back to Ramana Ashram and invite all of Ramana's prior devotees back, who are now entering into their old age, and take care of them until their death. So he did. He took care of many of Ramana Maharshi's devotees until their death. And so now he has lots and lots of stories to tell. So, in fact, the book of his stories about all of Ramana's devotees is about 800 and I think 40 pages long, something like that. It's quite long. So this is the story of Robert Adams. So when I say I in this, as I'm reading, I is Ganeshan. So in 1992, while traveling from San Diego to Phoenix, I had to pass through the Los Angeles airport. I saw an elderly American lady in the distance coming straight toward me through the crowd. She asked me, "Are you from India?" When I said yes, she very affectionately added, this evening at a friend's house, a very pious man is giving a talk on your Hindu spirituality. Since I am going there, I would like to take you. Thinking it would be some Hindu Swami giving the talk, I asked her, what is the name of that pious person? She answered, Robert Adams. I told her that I was giving a talk in that evening in Phoenix and asked her to accept my apologies. She seemed rather disappointed and said, it does not matter. I am so sorry you cannot come, but will you at least permit me to give you a few transcripts of his talks and go through them for me? I said that I would, so she handed me a bunch of computer-printed papers, which I then began reading on my flight to Phoenix. The very first page grabbed my attention. I found it so interesting that I read the entire manuscript at once. I was thrilled. I was swimming in joy. As the editor of The Mountain Path, I was interested in all of the 1993 issues with stories about aspirants who had experienced self-realization in the presence of Bhagavan. After reading Robert Adams' manuscript, I was particularly interested in publishing the story of his experience of self-realization. So I asked him to contribute an article. I knew that new aspirants pursuing self-realization would find personal accounts like his similar to what so many other devotees had experienced in Bhagavan's presence, tremendously encouraging in their own pursuit. In reply, Robert Adams graciously sent me a long letter. I am Robert Adams. I was born in New York in 1928, and from the very beginning, as far back as I can remember, when I was in a crib, a little man with a gray beard and white hair, about 2 feet tall, would appear before me at the other end of the crib and speak gibberish to me. Of course, being a child, I did not understand anything he said. When I was about 5 or 6 years old, I told my parents about it, and they thought I was playing games. I told my friends, and they chuckled. So I stopped saying anything about it. The apparitions of the little man stopped when I was about 7. Robert Adams also added that he did not know what to do. He didn't want to tell anyone about these unusual experiences, nor about the even stranger experiences that followed. Whenever he wanted something, whether a pencil or a chocolate, or even a particular item like a violin, it would appear whenever he uttered the name God 3 times. In the classroom, if someone wanted a pencil, he would say God 3 times, and the pencil would appear, and he would give it to the person who needed it. The same thing happened during tests. He didn't like to study. So when he sat down to take a test, he would utter God 3 times, and the answers would appear before him, and he would write them and pass. On one final mathematics examination, for which Robert had not studied, while holding the question paper, he said, God, 3 times, expecting the answers to be given to him as always. But suddenly, something altogether different happened. Subjectively, the whole room appeared filled with light, more brilliant than the sun. It was a beautiful, shining, warm glow, and the whole room, along with everything and everyone, was immersed in the light. And all the children seemed to be mere particles of that light. Robert says, I found myself melting into radiant being consciousness. I merged into immaculate awareness. It was not an out-of-body experience. This was completely different. I realized that I was not my body. What appeared to be my body was not real. I went beyond the light into pure radiant consciousness, and I became consciousness. And my individuality merged into pure and absolute bliss. I became the universe. The feeling is indescribable. It was total bliss and total joy. And even though it doesn't say anything here, I believe I read another version of this story once where it said that he failed that particular math test because because he just sat there in bliss and didn't write anything down on his paper. But it doesn't say that here, so I'll continue. After this experience, Robert Adams' life was not normal. As a teenager, maybe 14 or 15 years old, he felt the need for guidance. Some of his friends suggested that he go to Joel Goldsmith, a famous Christian and a true mystic. Joel Goldsmith had been in correspondence with Arthur Osborne and me. So Arthur Osborne, by the way, was a British devotee of Ramana Maharshi, and again, the me here is Ganeshan. So Joel Goldsmith had been writing to Arthur Osborne and Ganeshan. In every issue of Mountain Path, you will find brilliant and original articles by Joel Goldsmith. He heard Robert's story and advised him to go to Paramahansa Yogananda, who was in Encinitas, California. He said, "He will guide you." So Joel Goldsmith sent Robert Adams to Paramahansa Yogananda. Robert Adams went to Encinitas, full of interest, ecstasy, and excitement, and was instantly captivated by the spiritual splendor and aura of Paramahansa Yogananda. Robert told me that although he was just a teenage boy, among many other people who were there, the moment he set foot on the grounds outside, Paramahansa called his secretary and said, "There is a young boy, call him in." Robert prostrated to Paramahansa and said, "You are my guru." Paramahansa said, "No, I am not your guru. Your guru is Sri Ramana Maharshi. Ramana Maharshi is not well. You should go to him immediately." After leaving Paramahansa, Robert happened upon a copy of Who Am I? By Ramana Maharshi in the philosophy section of a library. Ramana Maharshi's picture was on the cover. When Robert saw the image, his hair stood on end because he recognized that face as the same one he had seen in his crib as a toddler. He wasted no time finding his way to Bhagavan. Here, he describes his first encounter with the Maharshi. "When I was 18 years old, I arrived at Arunachala. I took flowers and a bag full of fruits and offered them at his feet. Bhagavan looked at me and smiled, and I returned the smile. The very first look of the Maharshi engulfed me in a flood of light, peace, quietude, and bliss, and it opened my inner eye. I instantly recognized the meaning and purpose of all my experiences, that I was never a body, and that I was ever the unborn self, the eternal silence. The Maharshi exuded compassion, love, and bliss on the very first day. He looked at me and asked me whether I had eaten breakfast. When I said no, the Maharshi had the attendant bring fruits and porridge for me to eat. I lay down and went to sleep in the old hall. And when I woke up, the Maharshi guided me to a little shack and asked me to take rest. In the evening also he sent food. I ate and again went to sleep. Maharshi paid keen attention to what was needed for my body to rest and relax. The next morning, Robert went to the old hall to meet Bhagavan. What happened in the presence of the Maharshi guided him deep within. The silent and quietude of Bhagavan engulfed him. When he entered the hall, Bhagavan's attendant, Krishna Swami, was pestering Bhagavan with complaints about people at the ashram. After tolerating this for a while, Bhagavan looked sternly at Krishna Swami and said, "Remember the purpose for which you came here. Attend to it. Keep quiet." This was the very first instruction Robert got from Bhagavan. Although it was directed to Krishna Swami, Robert felt it was actually meant for him. For the next 3 years, his focus was within, and he stayed in the state of silence and quietude, never outwardly indulging himself in other people's affairs. Inwardly, he was established in quietude during this period, and outwardly in non-indulgence. There was no need for him to talk further to Bhagavan or to anyone else. That is why nobody ever knew Robert Adams, even though he stayed at the ashram for 3 years. Afterward, when I clarified this, one or two said that there was a young mad fellow by the name of Robert Adams. To that extent, he followed Bhagavan's teachings of non-indulgence with others. He was not talking and was doing practice all the time, and remaining in that state. So again, I've read a little bit about this in another story, so I'll just kind of step in here. At the ashram, you know, there were many people. And wherever you have a gathering of many people, you have what people do. People gossip and form cliques and, you know, socialize, and all of this kind of stuff was going on at the Ramana Maharshi ashram. And Robert just stayed out of all of it. He just spent all of his time in meditation, whether he was in his shack or whether he was in the old hall. He ignored everyone, had nothing to do with anyone. And that's why they thought he was mad, I guess. But in truth, what he was doing was he was following that instruction that he felt he got from Bhagavan to do what you came here to do. Keep quiet, right? And so that's how he spent his 3 years at the ashram. So he stayed completely out of the socialization that was going on with everyone else. So I'll start that paragraph again. So afterward, when I clarified this, one or two said that there was a young mad fellow by the name of Robert Adams. To that extent, he followed Bhagavan's teachings of non-indulgence with others. He was not talking and was doing practice all the time and remaining in that state. Bhagavan dropped the body, and even that did not affect Robert Adams. He was not affected by the physical disappearance of Bhagavan because he was continuously seeing only the omniscient self. Even when Bhagavan was associated with the body, he experienced only the transparent self. So in the absence of the body, he did not feel sorrow or suffering, but went deeper and deeper into the stillness of self. Bhagavan appeared to him in a dream and directed him, "Go to Benares. There is an old Swami. Stay with him." This Swami was 90 years old, and Robert sat in his presence every day. Conversation was unnecessary. One day, the elderly sadhu said to the people around him, "I know my death is approaching in 3 days, and I have not completed my mission. But when I die, there will be a teenage boy on the road that will also die for no apparent reason, and I will occupy his body and continue with my mission. On the third day, when the elderly Swami was in the street, a young 14 or 15-year-old boy was crossing the road, and suddenly he had a fit and died. After 15 or 20 minutes, he woke up and disappeared into the forest. This provided Robert the conviction to be the self, not to be distracted with the appearance or disappearance of the body. He roamed India for several years, meeting with sages and saints. Again, Bhagavan appeared to him in a dream and guided him. You go back to your country and spread this teaching of self-inquiry to aspirants in America. Bhagavan was very adamant. Do not start an institution. Do not be a guru. No publicity. If more than 15 people gather around you, then remove yourself from that town, but continue to share the teaching. Robert traveled in an RV. Nobody knew of his spiritual stature because he sought no publicity. Only a select few knew. By the time he arrived in Hollywood, he was deeply affected by Parkinson's disease. He was unable to move, so he had to stay there. A woman named Mary and her friends took care of Robert and helped him disseminate Bhagavan's teaching of self-inquiry. Satsang with him was so powerful that when he came and sat in the hall, he just looked at everyone for 20 minutes, wordlessly inviting them to go into silence. It did not matter how many people were there. Often, the Great Dane Robert had named Yogi was also present. After meditation, Robert would speak for a few minutes. When I wrote to him asking him if I could meet him, he wrote back to me, "You can meet me in Los Angeles." At the same time, the president of A Course in Miracles, Dr. Tara Singh, was at Ramana Ashram. He invited Anuradha and me, and you might remember Anuradha. She was in the story last week about Papaji. She was the one who didn't trust Papaji and told Ganesha not to write anything about Papaji. And then she went and visited him and was touched by an experience with him, and then came back and told Ganesha, "Yes, you can write about Papaji." So this is Anuradha. So Tara Singh invited Anuradha and me to stay at the Course in Miracles headquarters in Los Angeles. He also offered to arrange for us to meet Robert Adams. We became very good friends with Tara Singh. Anuradha and I were thrilled to accept Robert's invitation to join him for lunch because we so deeply admired and respected what he was doing spiritually without an institution or even a house. It was not only a meeting for lunch, but a blessed opportunity for us to reminisce about the Master, Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharshi, who not only shared wisdom, but insisted on everyone coming to Ramana Ashram to share food as well. When he approached the restaurant, we could see only Robert's back, but that was more than enough to convey the spiritual aura, the peace, the stillness, the friendliness. Everything was so palpable, even from such a long distance. We found him delightfully humorous. I asked him again and again to tell me more about Bhagavan. I wanted to hear the stories directly from his lips. He again recounted how he had seen Bhagavan in the crib, as well as other experience he had had with the Maharshi, even though he had already written them to me. Then he invited us to a satsang at Mary's house that evening. When we arrived, we found 70 people in attendance, all sitting in calm silence. There was a special seat for Robert because of his frail condition, behind which was a picture of Bhagavan. When Robert came and sat, he simply looked at everyone for 20 minutes. He invited them into complete silence. Afterward, he took the microphone. He had already arranged a chair for me and introduced me warmly. He said, "I welcome my master, Ramana Maharshi's grandnephew, and his secretary, Anuradha. There we go, Anuradha." He said, "I welcome my master, Ramana Maharshi's grandnephew, and his secretary, Anuradha, and I want him to speak." After I spoke for nearly half an hour, he took the microphone from me and said, "Every word Ganeshan has spoken today, I entirely agree with." I want to share one small but significant incident from my time there. After Robert and I spoke, I sat at his seat. A friend of Robert's for more than 20 years, John Wilkins, asked, "Robert, I want you to tell me, what is truth and untruth? What is reality and unreality? I do not want you to quote scriptures or make tall claims. You must make me experience this right now at your feet." I was thrilled to be sitting so close when Robert responded. He smiled quietly for a few moments, and then suddenly he became very serious as he looked at John and said, "Who are you?" John thought at first that Robert was asking this because of his Parkinson's. Sometimes he became forgetful. So John said, "I am John Wilkins." Then Robert beamed the most gracious smile and said, "I am is the truth, and John Wilkins is the untruth. That I am is the reality, and John Wilkins is the unreality." At this, everyone went into perfect repose or silence. Robert invited me to come again the next year, but told me that he might be moving to Sedona, where he felt destiny was calling him to go. The following year, Anuradha and I did indeed visit Robert in Sedona, staying in a house he had arranged for us. As he had done the previous year, Robert asked me to speak at nearly every satsang, listening to me with rapt attention. Anuradha felt so grateful to Robert that she wanted to serve him in some way. She said to him, "I want to do something for you. Please tell me what service I can render you." He said, "You can cook Ramana Ashram food for me." I was very fond of the food in Ramana Ashram, so it would please me greatly if you would make it for me. Anuradha was very happy to do this for him. She asked our host to hunt for the proper cooking vessels to make South Indian dishes, suggesting that anyone who provided one could also come for lunch. Initially, Robert said that only 6 people were coming, but the numbers grew quickly as more and more people offered to bring the necessary vessels. Every 2 hours, Robert Adams, who was a very humorous master, sent word to Anuradha telling her that 6 more people were coming. So just like that, the guest list grew to 60 people. Anuradha and her helpers were up all night preparing the food. Since Robert had asked for Ramana Ashram food, Anuradha was very firm that it had to be sambar, rasam, 3 vegetables, yogurt, payasam, and pot pad. Everything was made to order. Remembering that Bhagavan had always insisted on being served last so that everyone else could be fed, Anuradha knew that Robert would also want to be served last. The lunch was scrumptious and delicious. Anuradha served Robert, who took 3 or 4 helpings and was thoroughly delighted. Everyone there, including myself, was very happy to see Robert eating with such relish. After the meal was over, Anuradha approached him innocently and asked, "Robert, was it like Ramana Ashram food? Was there anything missing?" Robert said, "Yes, it was all perfect and delicious, but one thing was missing, the banana leaf. Because if you go to Ramana Ashram and eat, they don't serve you on a plate. They serve you on a banana leaf. So she must have served him on a plate. He says the only thing that was missing was the banana leaf. That day, everyone wanted Robert to conduct satsang after lunch. Robert said, "I am not going to talk today. Only Ganeshan is going to talk, and he should talk only on the topic that I give him. Your topic is Bhagavan and the monkeys." I spoke about this for 20 minutes or longer. Until then, I had never put all the stray incidents together as a collective account of Bhagavan's relationship with the monkeys. But when I did so, everyone laughed and laughed. Then someone in the audience said to Anuradha, "Now that we have heard about Bhagavan from Ganeshan, we would like to hear about Ganeshan from you." Robert interjected, "Anuradha, let me give you a topic, Bhagavan and Ganeshan." After relating a few incidents from my childhood relationship with Bhagavan, Anuradha added, "As a child, Bhagavan was known as Golden Hand because whatever he touched flourished. At Ramana Ashram, Ganeshan is called Funeral Hand because it is he who lights the funeral pyre for anyone who dies at Ramana Ashram." And by the way, I mentioned to you all that I met Ganeshan. And when I met Ganeshan, I sat and listened to him tell stories about his life with Ramana Maharshi. And they were simple, simple stories, because when Ganeshan was with Ramana Maharshi, Ganeshan was just a child. And so, like, one of the stories he talked about is how somebody brought a whole bunch of toys to the ashram one day to be given to children. And Ramana Maharshi let Ganeshan pick one toy for himself. And Ganeshan picked a little airplane. And Ramana asked him, you know, why did you pick the airplane? And Ganeshan said, "Because I want to be a pilot." And, you know, and Ramana sat and played with him in the airplane while Ganeshan pretended to be a pilot. So they were very, very simple stories. But what happened when Ganeshan was telling these stories, and he spent about 45 minutes to an hour telling these stories, as soon as he started telling the stories, I started crying. And there wasn't even anything profound about the stories, except there was this profound feeling of Ramana Maharshi's presence while he told these stories. And I was so touched or overcome by the feeling of this presence that the entire time Ganeshan talked, I cried. He just ignored me and kept right on telling the stories. But I just sat there crying and crying and crying. And then, I don't know if it's because I was crying or if he would have told this story anyway, he told the story about a Western woman who used to come to the ashram sometimes. And I don't know if she lived in India, because back then many British people lived in India. He didn't say, but she would come to the ashram from time to time. And he said whenever she was in the presence of Bhagavan, all she could do was cry. And it was so funny as he told that story, because that's all I could do was cry. And I'm not a crier. You know, some people, like, you know, like Carrie is a crier. Carrie will cry at the drop of a hat, if you know her. But I am not a crier. I will go years without crying just because I'm happy and I have no need to cry. You know, I'm not a crier. But I sat there crying and crying and crying as he told these stories. So, and you're asking, is Ganeshan still in the body? Yes, he is. He lives near Ramana Ashram in India. However, I think that the summer that he was here, which was the summer of 2016, was his last trip to the United States. And I think even in India now, he has quit receiving guests. He is over 80 years old. I'm not sure how old, but over 80 years old, and, you know, really beginning to back away from public attention. But I did get to meet him. Karen Worth has met him. Jay McCormick has met him. Of course, Michael Langford has met him. So many of us have had the opportunity to meet Ganeshan. But, you know, I just wanted to comment on that, because he just makes this simple, he just makes a simple sentence that, you know, that he told stories about him and Bhagavan, and then he goes on. And what, you know, what's not communicated there is what that experience might have been like for the people. It's literally as if Ramana Maharshi descends when he talks about him. He descends and fills the room. And like I said, I was overcome. And I just cried and cried and cried the entire time he spoke. So that's not mentioned here. I thought I would fill that in because other people may have had that experience as well. So, again, the last thing that I read was that Anuranda talked about how Ganeshan is called Funeral Hand. And by the way, Ganeshan told us this as well when I was with him, that his nickname was Funeral Hand. And the reason, again, that his nickname is Funeral Hand is because, as I mentioned, in the 60s at some point, Ganeshan was guided. By this time, he was an adult. He was guided to go back to Ramana Ashram to call all of the old devotees back, to invite them to all come back and live, and to take care of them until their death. And this is what Ganeshan did. This was his spiritual practice, he says. He took care of every one of these people, every one of their needs, until every one of them died. And again, he was the one that was there, of course, then when they were cremated. And so he would probably take the honor. I guess he did, took the honor to light the funeral pyre underneath the body. And so he has the nickname Funeral Hand. But actually, you know, it was a great honor for him to go and take care of all of these people, many of them enlightened. And, you know, he has story after story after story, not only from his direct experience, but all of the stories that all of these people told him, right, about their experience with Ramana Maharshi. And again, there's this huge book. It's, like I said, 840, 850 pages filled with these stories. And if any of you want that book, I have a copy, and it is free, and I can distribute it free. So just send me an email, reginadonakers@yahoo.com, and say, you know, I would like the book of stories about Ramana Maharshi, and I'll just attach it and send it right back to you. Okay, so reginadonakers@yahoo.com. And I'll be happy to send that to you as a PDF. And in fact, the story I'm reading now is one of the stories from that book. And the story I read last week about Papaji is one of the stories from that book. But for now, I'm going to continue with the story. So when Anuradha told everyone that Ganeshan's nickname was Funeral Hand, this naturally evoked much laughter. Robert pretended to become very serious and shouted, "Run away, all of you who are afraid of death. Run away. The funeral hands are here." I was sitting in front of him by then because I loved to be at his feet. He bent over and told me, "Ganeshan, extend your hands. I'm ready." Everyone appreciated the humor in this. That remarkable satsang ended with singing and dancing. Before Robert left, a devotee named Sharmila started singing and everyone else joined in. Much to our delight, Robert got up and danced to the tune. He was usually dressed in a t-shirt, jeans, and upturned golf cap. He was very humorous, simple, and a natural person, always making jokes, mostly on himself at his own expense. As we saw when he asked to take my funeral hands at the luncheon. It was my idea to sing, "Hit the road, Jack, don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more," as he left that day. On my way back to Ramana Ashram, I received an international phone call while I was resting in Benares at the Krishnamurti Institution. It was Robert Adams. He said, "Ganeshan," but could not continue. So his assistant, Richard, spoke to me. He said, "Robert is very insistent that you should come to Sedona and spend 3 months with him. He has also invited Anuradha, knowing that you cannot come alone, and he will make all the arrangements. Sharmila will pick you up, and the other devotees will look after your needs. When I got home, there was a letter waiting for me in Robert's own handwriting. Ganeshan, please come and spend 3 months with me. At the exact time Anuradha and I landed in San Francisco, Robert dropped the body in Sedona. With deep emotion, I recalled his words to me at our last satsang in Sedona. Take me in your funeral hands. I now understood that he meant that literally. I felt that Robert still had something he wanted to convey to me. The message of self-inquiry has to pass through, and the message of I am is to be shared. So I went back to Sedona with Anuradha and Sharmila. We spent 3 months there as guests, not in one home, but in three or four. Robert's followers wanted me to join in their satsang sharings, and I did so with an emphasis on pure self-inquiry. By inquiring, one can reach into that quietude and silence, that silence which Bhagavan had revealed to Robert, the silence which Robert had revealed to all of them, was to continue. Is that not why Robert requested me to be there for 3 months? My own lesson from Robert was to take the whole world, all the happenings outside of myself, to be just a dream within the mind of God. That awareness was deeply implanted in me by Robert. That was his divine gift to me. I want to share with you how Robert's good humor persisted even in his last days. He was sick and bedridden. A young fellow named John was attending to him, knowing full well that Robert was a realized master. Robert's wife was not in favor of John's attention to her husband. She was always giving him trouble and driving him out of the house. But John was there to serve Robert, because Robert could not move. One day, Robert wanted hot water, so John went into the kitchen where Robert's wife was drying a pan. She got so angry, she threatened to throw the frying pan at John. John was literally frightened and shouted, "Robert! Robert! She's trying to kill me! What should I do? Please guide me!" Robert, who was lying down in the next room, said, "Duck!" On one side of the coin, Robert was absolutely serious, and on the other side of the coin, he was absolutely humorous. The highest teaching in the world is silence. There is nothing higher than this. That is what Arunachala stands for. A devotee who sits with a sage purifies his mind just by being in silence with the sage. The mind naturally becomes quieter, even when no words are exchanged. In silence, boundaries dissolve. Silence is the ultimate reality, and everything exists in this omniscient silence. Silence, where nothing is happening, transcends time and space. A brand new, pristine dimension of nothingness is revealed. That is where all the peace and capacity is self-evident. That is truth. That is who you really are. In the deep silence, where there is no good and no bad, and no one trying to achieve anything, there is just being. Pure being. The only freedom you will ever have is when the I am the body idea is transcended to reveal your immortal self. And on the other side, you are real. What you and the world appear to be is an illusion. The real is the substratum of the illusion. Identify with the real, not with the illusion. Do not accept anything as you see it as the reality. The only freedom you have is to awaken from this daydream, for this is only a mortal dream, and you shall awaken and be free. There is actually no such thing as birth, and there is no such thing as death. Nobody is born, nobody dies, and nobody prevails in between. Nothing that appears exists as it is seen and cognized. Only the self exists, like the screen on which a movie is projected. All this is the self, and the silent state of I am is that. You are absolute reality, the movie screen, that. You are awareness, emptiness, Sat Chit Ananda. That is your true inherent nature. It is that present silence that hosts and watches thoughts, that is the now. Relinquish doership and abide in the self. Be at peace and be free. Empty your mind, become still, and everything will happen of its own accord. There is really nothing you have to do. Just be still. Be still and know I am God. The state of I am is the immortal self. Accept that and be free. All is well. And that's the end of the story about Robert Adams. So I think that the thing that strikes me the most about the story of Robert Adams, of course, there's all kinds of, you know, mystical experiences, like having Ramana Maharshi visit him in his crib from the time he can remember all the way up till he was 7 years old. And gosh, you know, as a kid, you know, just whatever he wished for, then saying God, 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 it would appear. All the way up to a violin, just appeared. You know, and then having that incredible mystical experience where he expanded and expanded until he was the universe while taking a math test, which he, of course, failed. You know, but that's not what impresses me about this story. You know, that's just kind of the window dressing. And I think if Robert Adams was here, he would agree with me. What impresses me about the story is how when Robert Adams was sitting in the old hall, and if I remember correctly from what we just read, it was like his second day at Ramana Ashram. And he's sitting there with his eyes closed, and Ramana's attendant is complaining about the people and what they're doing. And then Ramana says to him, you know, do what you came here to do. Keep quiet. But of course, he's talking to the attendant. But Robert takes that as his guidance. And then he does it. And he stays at Ramana Ashram for 3 years. During that time, Ramana himself died. And not even Ramana's body ending swayed Robert Adams from his practice. He was completely dedicated and would not be pulled out by any event. He was completely dedicated to self-realization, and he knew that the journey was a journey of within. And so he stayed at the ashram for 3 years, not engaging with other people, just going within. That's what impresses me about this story. So we have 11 minutes left. I wonder if I'll be allowed to play music now. I am! Isn't that funny? apparently for some reason God wanted us to hear the story before I played any music. So I'm going to play maybe two songs. The first song I'm going to play, if I can remember the name of it. Let's see. There's a song here that actually was written by Ramana Maharshi. Oh. He didn't write it. He didn't put it to music. He wrote the words, and then someone else put it to music. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to play another song, and while I play that, I will look for the one written by Ramana Maharshi. So first, let me just play a song by Peter McKenna. This song by Peter McKenna is about Ramana Maharshi. I think I probably played it at my very first Guiding Light on Ramana Maharshi. This is called Forever Here. And while we're listening to Forever Here, I'll look for the other song that Ramana wrote. Here we go.
Regarded highly by all, even worshipped as a messenger from above. He was simple, he was pure, he was silent and vast, he was an incarnation of love. The mountain was his friend and his beloved. His inspiration he saw. He was one with the mountain, and so is he now. Body was spent, it was dying, everyone knew. People around him were sad because they thought, if his body is gone, he is gone too. But where do you think I am going? The mountain is my home always. Why do you believe I am leaving? Oh, I am forever. Why do you believe
I found it. Let me make sure my iTunes stops. Jamie is like really wanting me to stop completely now. We only have 2 minutes, but we'll play as much of this song as we can. Again, the lyrics to this song were written by Ramana Maharshi.
Ocean of nectar, full of grace, engulfing the world in your splendor. Arunachala, supreme face, be the sun and open the lotus of my heart in bliss. Be the sun and open the lotus of my heart in bliss. Arunachala, Arunachala, mountain of light. Arunachala, ocean of nectar, I feel you inside. Arunachala, Arunachala, mountain of light. Arunachala, ocean of nectar, there's just you inside. You are the self dancing in the heart of all. In you the waves of the world arise and fall. All those who rest in you are forever free. Like a river that melts back into the infinite sea. Like a river that melts back into the infinite sea. Arunachala mountain of light, Arunachala, ocean of nectar, I feel you inside. Arunachala, Arunachala mountain of light.
I'll let go of it there. And so next week when I return, the last 2 weeks have been story time. So next week when I return, we will go back to the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi and continue with that teaching. But it's been fun taking breaks and listening to these stories. So I'll see you all later this evening. Bye-bye.